Welcome back to Between the Before and After, a podcast about the stories that shape us. I'm your host, Coach John McLernan. Each episode, I bring you an inspiring guest with a moving story that shines a light on the power of the human spirit. I'm excited to share this story with you, so let's dive in.
Well, imagine having what seems to be the perfect pregnancy, and everything's going along smoothly, all the checkups, everything's looking good, and then all of a sudden, a very rare medical condition is discovered, and your child has to be delivered at 28 weeks. This is the remarkable story of Jody Klerstenfeld. Now, I should have checked the pronunciation of your last name. I hope I got it close to right.
So. That is perfect.
That's awesome. Well, Jody, welcome to the show. I'm excited to explore your story.
Thanks so much for having me, Coach John. And just listening to the intro, I'm inspired, and that's what inspired me to create Flourish. So it's a perfect place for me to be.
That's awesome. And actually, before we dive into your story, why don't we tell people a little bit about sort of what you're doing presently and where you're at? Because I think your daughter's doing well. So the story has, at this point, a happy continuation. Well, won't say a happy ending, but a happy continuation. But what is it you do currently?
I currently help other NICU and FEMI families on their journey through the NICU and the years beyond. There's a lot of trauma and processing and understanding from a parent perspective that needs to really be fully digested after you go through such an experience as having your child in the NICU. Mm-hmm. And some studies say it takes up to, on average, 7 to 8 years to fully process that whole experience. And in the meantime, that experience pervades every aspect of your life, personally and professionally. And I really work with parents to reframe their mindset on what they thought their parenthood journey was going to be and how it currently looks and how to unpack that and move forward.
Well, I think that's a really important discussion. What's really encouraging is we see kind of, I think, at a societal level, we're becoming more trauma aware and trauma informed. Because for a lot of human history, we didn't really have an understanding of it or its effects or how far reaching it could be. And so to become more informed about it means that we don't necessarily just have to push aside what we're experiencing and brush it aside as, oh, well, this is just a fact of life and I got to, you know, dig my heels in and put my head down and kind of carry on, but give space to process that. And you mentioned, you know, I've got a number two on the way. I've got a 2-year-old and
congratulations. You know,
thank you. It's super exciting. And actually, my wife's at 28 weeks as of yesterday. And so at the time of recording this, that is. So I think about this, and we have this idea or this picture in mind of how this parenthood journey is going to go. But I think to myself, you know, we're really fortunate. Number one, he was late, actually. He was about 15 days overdue, and my wife had to be induced. And there was some trauma actually around that side of it as well, because it was a very difficult. I mean, I don't think any birth is easy. My respect for motherhood is just off the charts after witnessing it firsthand. But there's some, I guess, that are even more difficult than the average birth. And that was the case for my wife. And so that was a really difficult thing to go through. And I spent probably the first couple of months really just being her care nurse and helping her to recover from that experience. But we have this idea in our head of how the parenthood journey is supposed to go and play out. And, you know, so far it's been really, we've been really, really fortunate. My little 2-year-old boy, he's gorgeous. He's beautiful. He's just a ton of fun. And we're loving it. But in the back of my mind, you know, this pregnancy is a couple of years later. My wife's a little bit older. She's getting close to 40. So we're kind of older parents. And I think to myself, man, I just hope this comes out kind of okay. There's always this sort of nagging thought in the back of my mind that I can't really relax until the baby's born. What did you kind of going into your pregnancy? Was this your first? And I'm not sure if this is your only child.
Yeah, it's my first. It's my only child as a result of what happened. I'm not allowed to have any more children, but my husband has 3 boys from his first marriage, and they treat our daughter like a princess. It's really cute.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. And so I think as we dive into your story, so, you know, going into this pregnancy, you kind of had an idea or a picture in your mind. What were you picturing this was going to be like? And obviously you're together with your husband. What age are the 3 boys?
The 3 boys, believe it or not, are 28, 27, and 22. And together we have a 4-year-old.
Okay. Wow.
I was about to be a flower girl in the 27-year-old's wedding.
Well, that's quite remarkable. Is there a bit of an age difference between yourself and your husband, or did he get started very young?
There is an age difference between us, 12 years.
Okay.
I am just fortunate, and I always tell this to people, that he wanted to do it again.
Okay. Yeah, no kidding.
A lot of times when you could be an empty nester, or you've been through those baby years, you just don't want to. And
right.
I'm fortunate that he wanted to.
Well, that's fascinating. And how did you two meet?
We met on a blind date. We really never would have met, but for the people who set us up, our lives were just so different geographically and everything else. But, you know, the stars were aligned. It's about timing and being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. Was this like an old school blind date? So not just like an internet plenty of fish or something like that? Yeah.
An old school blind date. I actually never even spoke to him on the phone before we met. We just texted briefly, but I saw pictures of him and I knew I was going to like him because I saw pictures of him mostly with his three boys. Okay. And I could tell how much he loved being a dad.
Yeah, that's quite something. So now I'm curious, like, what's kind of your first thoughts? You're going to this date. Where did you go for your first date?
We went out to dinner in the East Village of Manhattan to an Italian restaurant. And he was living in Westchester at the time. And our date went so well. He was literally struggling to make the last train back because the Metro North closes at a certain time on the weekends. And he's like, I got to go now because I'm going to miss the last train. And I'm like, okay.
What was your first thought as you walk up the table, or did you meet him like before being at the table?
I met him. He was sitting at the bar before we were seated. And when he turned around and smiled, I was just smitten, right? And I knew that smile that I saw in those pictures was exactly the smile that I saw in person.
That's amazing. I love that because I'm just kind of playing this like a movie scene kind of in my head, you know, picturing you walk into a bar that maybe the lights are a little bit dimly lit. You've not met this. Maybe there's some butterflies. You're like, okay, what's this going to be like? I think it's going to be good. I have feelings for this man already because of what I've seen and what I picture he's like. And then turns around and smiles and bang, you're like, wow, that's the guy that I'm looking to meet here.
Yes, yes, yes. And like I said, not for our friends, we wouldn't have even have met.
Yeah. How do people go about arranging a blind date? Like, how do they approach you with this? And how do they, because I would think to myself, like, you know, had you said to them like, hey, I'm like looking for someone or something like that? Or were you like busy as a professional? Like how did that come about?
Kind of a little bit of both. I kept bumping into this woman who ironically I went to school with. She was in my elementary school, junior high school and high school, but lost touch with. But I would see her out just at parties or events in New York City. And she'd always say to me, how is it that you're single? How is it that you're single? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm waiting to meet the right person. And she's like, I'm going to work on it for you. And I'm like, okay. And then that was it.
Wow. Well, that's quite something. And do you see this friend a little bit more regularly now?
Yes. And then randomly, we found out that our dads went to high school together.
Huh.
But this was only after the fact, after I was already married. It was kind of incredible.
Oh, I mean, and this is quite the fun backstory, really. I like to explore that because I think that kind of lays the groundwork for kind of what you were going to go through. And so, and what's your husband's name?
David.
David. That's a great name. The name runs through my family. My middle name's David. My dad is David. And both on my wife's side as well. So I think that's the mark of a good man.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so you get married and you realize, hey, you know what? Like I would like to have kids and he's already through it. And I feel like I would at first think that, yeah, maybe if he's already got three grown children, like I don't want to go through the diaper stage again, the sleepless nights, the infant years, things like that, the toddler tantrums, all that sort of fun stuff. But he says, no, I'm game.
On our first date, he did. And I actually only agreed to go out with him because I knew he wanted to have more children. So I knew that ahead of time. Otherwise, I was not going to go out with him on a date because it was something that I really, really wanted and felt was missing in my life. So aside from finding the right partner who also wanted to have children. So we had that discussion even on our first date.
Yeah. Well, and imagine if he's like a little bit older, you know, there's a difference between, you know, I think about like maybe in high school or like early in life relationships where, you know, there's a sort of a lot of kind of like dancing and beating around the bush. And there's a lot of sort of shielding and protecting and not wanting to be vulnerable and so on. But there comes a certain point in life where you're like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, this is where I'm at. And I don't really want to waste time, you know, just with this sort of pleasantries. Let's get down. Let's get to the business.
You're 100% correct. I think, you know, I got married, I was 40. So I think you get to a certain point in your life and you're just like, I don't have time for the BS.
Yeah.
I don't have time to play the games. This is what I want. This is what's important. This is my non-negotiables, right? Or this is what I'm willing, I cannot live without. Yeah. I think there's a difference when you say, I cannot live without this. Mm-hmm. And once you take stock of that and realize that, and also as you're older, you realize that time is short and playing games is fun when you're in your 20s, maybe like young 30s. But after that, you just want that person.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You said something interesting as well there that you felt like something was missing in your life. You already had like a pretty well-established career. You were an established professional. And, but at a certain point in time, you said, hey, I feel like something's missing. I'd like to be a mom. Was that a conscious choice to wait until you were older to have children?
No, I think as a woman, we all kind of dream when we're younger, when we're going to get married, how many kids we're going to have, what that all is going to look like, right? Similar mm-hmm. to your point about your vision of your pregnancy. Yeah. And so I thought I'd be married at 28, a mom by 30, maybe have like 3 kids or so. And I just had met the wrong people. I had been engaged and called off my wedding. And hardest, best decision ever, because it led me to my husband. And it also, I learned so much from that experience that made me such a different person that I don't know if I had met my husband prior to that experience, that we would have even been right for each other.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really prescient point as well. The idea that our past and sometimes unpleasant past experiences kind of shape who we are, but actually lead us to appreciating the person that we end up with. And, you know, I think my wife had been in a really difficult, like multi-year relationship with an individual prior to meeting me. And I wasn't really fully aware of that situation until after we'd actually got together. But, you know, I joke that like he did me a great service by being a jerk, because it made me look even better. So, these hard experiences in life, and I think it's the tagline of the podcast, right? The stories that shape us. And so I love hearing the backstory that sort of lays the groundwork for this. And so you decide we're going to have a kid, and you know, the excitement, I remember that, you know, when my wife said to me like, hey, I'm pregnant, you know, and all the butterflies and nerves. And, actually, I was just thinking there was one thing. My wife had a bit of digestive upset, and I gave her some enzymes to kind of help. So I'm a nutritionist, and I have a background in supplement chemistry and so on. But so I'd given her some enzymes, to kind of digestive enzymes, just to help break things down. And then I panicked because on the enzymes, there's a couple of plant-based compounds, one from pineapple called bromelain, sorry. And it was said that there's the potential, you know, that with this substance here can trigger like a miscarriage. Now it's quite rare, to be fair, but I remember because it's our first pregnancy and we'd been together for 17 years at this point, and I was like panicking, like, oh no. And then my wife had all this like pain and discomfort and things. And I was just freaking out thinking that like, uh-oh, you know, have I just like doomed our pregnancy by accidentally giving my wife something innocently to help her with digestion? And so I just share that story to say, you know, and I don't know if this was your experience, but like kind of now you're pregnant after so many years, you know, was there like this sort of anticipation or this was like a high stakes, did it feel like a high stakes thing for you?
I don't know. You know, we had gotten pregnant and I miscarried Mm-hmm. And well, first and foremost, let me say, you would not have, right? I don't know anything about the science, but you said you didn't even really even know that your wife was pregnant yet. So,
yeah,
you know, but to your point of, was it high stakes? It was something that I really had wanted. And becoming pregnant is a very humbling experience, I think, regardless of your age. Yes, if you're in your 20s and your 30s, it's that much easier, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And you can't model it out. You can take vitamins. I credit acupuncture for really helping me and a whole bunch of other things. You can put yourself in a position to hopefully help have a successful outcome, but there's no hard and fast recipe. For getting pregnant, on top of, yes, being the right time of month, you also have to have a little bit of luck. And your eggs have to be right. Right. So all of that. And so my husband and I, after he'd miscarried, we tried some IVF and that didn't work. We were taking a break. And that was when I got pregnant. I called my fertility doctor because I was like, I'm always regular. I said, the one time I really wasn't regular was when I was pregnant the last time. I said, do you think it's because I've been on hormones for about a year or so? And he goes, well, didn't you get your period last month and the month before? And I said, yes. He goes, well, come in. We'll check it out. He goes, we'll give you a pregnancy test. Just to check it out. I'm like, okay. Hadn't even given it a second thought. And later that afternoon, he called me and told me I was pregnant. And my immediate reaction was, how? Because we had taken a break. Like, I feel like Ross and Rachel. We had taken a break from doing IVF.
Right.
And I guess whatever, right? And, you know, they say that that happens for a lot of people. So there we are. We got pregnant.
I find that kind of funny as well, because I think in my own experience, like we'd sort of planned, okay, we're gonna have a try for a second one, and we tried for a bit, and we're like, okay, like let's just sort of take the pressure off, because you know, the idea, like we want to have like this sort of time gap, you know, 9 months at this point or whatever, you know, so they're this many months or this many years apart and so on. And like you said, you try to plan it out, and then when we weren't really planning on it, then my wife actually got pregnant, and so maybe there's something about just kind of taking that pressure and that stress off of like trying to make it happen. Did you feel a sense of, you mentioned, I think you said you were 40 when you were pregnant. Is that right?
No, I was 40. What, Jenna? I was 42.
42. Okay. My sister-in-law got accidentally pregnant at 42. Vasectomy didn't work, I guess. she thought she was going through early menopause, and now they have a beautiful daughter that's just 8 months older than my son. So these two, it's really special, these two cousins get to connect, because their other two kids are like 18 and 20. And so, you also mentioned something else that I just wanted to briefly touch on, that because sometimes it this part also gets glossed over. You mentioned that you'd miscarried as well. And I know in a sense, it's a relatively common experience. I don't know the stats. I thought it was maybe 1 in 4, or like it's quite high, or surprisingly high. Although many times it happens within maybe the first trimester, maybe even before a woman's aware that they're pregnant. But I guess at this point you would have been aware that you were pregnant, and you were aware that you were miscarried. And how do you navigate that, and sort of the disappointment that comes with that?
I think, you know, first of all, regardless of whenever you would miscarry, right? It's a huge loss. Mm-hmm. I reconciled it by something would have been wrong with me, the baby, or both of us. Mm-hmm. And then my sister-in-law said something wonderful to me. And, you know, she, I hope, Nicole, you're not mad at me, that she had miscarried between their first and second. My brother, my sister-in-law have 3 girls. Mm. And she said to me, well, if I didn't miscarry, then I wouldn't have Madison and I wouldn't have Emily. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine my life without Madison and Emily. And I don't want to imagine my life without Madison and Emily. These were the children I was supposed to have. Mm. So in her way, she was telling me, right, you give birth or the situation allows you to have birth when it's supposed to happen. So she believes she has the children that she's supposed to have. And likewise, same here. That's why I said something would have been wrong. That's not to say that it didn't take me a while to get over it. And
just to grieve the loss. Yeah.
But I feel like when she put it in terms like that, it made me understand so much better the reality portion of it. And not from a medical perspective, just from a real life experience perspective. And I thought that was really, really important.
And I appreciate you sharing that as well, because I think it's important. I know awareness has increased again, quite significantly, but there's still a lot of, maybe there's like a shame or sort of a stigma around when it happens, despite it being very, very commonplace. And so whenever we can share difficult experiences like that, it can maybe help somebody realize they're not alone in this experience. So I appreciate that.
I think as women too, we feel like we shouldn't complain, especially right, how many people want to get pregnant that maybe can't get pregnant, or the fact that they were even allowed to get pregnant. You know, I think there's a lot of shame in that. And also you could add mom guilt to that. You can add mom guilt to so many things in life. But something like that, maybe did I do the wrong thing? Or maybe before I knew I was pregnant, I drank too much or whatever. You can what if yourself. So I think we just need to kind of destigmatize that and let women or society as a whole understand that, you know, there is a grieving process and there is a process to getting back to how you once were, or not even necessarily how you once were, but just moving on forward from that experience.
Giving place to process the emotions, which is really, really important. You know, and one of the things I feel about being like an older parent, I'm 41. And I think there's a level of compassion and understanding that I have that I probably wouldn't have had as like a headstrong 20-something year old who felt like I had the world by the tail. So maybe there's also something to be said for just an element of kind of grace and compassion that comes in the picture as life has knocked us around a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that just comes with experience and wisdom. And I think you realize that you're not necessarily invincible, right? Someone in their 20s thinks they could do whatever and it's not going to matter and it's not going to make a difference. And while I think we all have to go through that part of our lives, there is beauty and wisdom in age. And I would say the same even about getting married at an older age. In so far as that I knew myself as a person at that point and what was important to me and what I could maybe, you know, compromise on. And I knew that I wanted someone who would grow with me and understand what I wanted to do with my life, as opposed to when you get married, when you're younger, you don't necessarily think of all those actions and consequences.
It's funny. I just had this thought. You know, what advice would I give to myself? I got married when I was 20, just before my 25th birthday, like 4 days before, actually. So I said I got a wife for a birthday present. but I'd pictured in my head I wasn't going to get married till I was 28. But then I met my wife and I was like, this is the one. So I was very fortunate in that regard. But I was just thinking, what advice would I give to my younger self as I got married? And it would go something like, the person that you married is not going to be that same person in 10 years. You're both going to grow. And you have a choice whether or not you grow together or grow apart. But the one thing that's inevitable is you're going to grow and change. And so I think that's, again, maybe something that comes with age. It's hard to pass on.
That's great advice. I mean, I think everyone could learn from that. You're so true. When you're 25, you haven't lived a lot of life, quote unquote, especially as an adult and doing things on your own. And yes, to your point, you want someone who's going to grow with you. And even if at some point, right, maybe one person might grow a little bit faster, or you still, at the end of the day, the two of you together, that's what matters most. And you're there to lift each other up and cheer the other person up.
Absolutely. And so with your daughter and with this pregnancy, you know, things as far as you knew were going along swimmingly, shall we say. I just wanted an excuse to use that term. Things were going swimmingly. And it seemed like everything was going well. Most checkups, I guess, ultrasounds looked good and whatnot. And then at what point was this, what was the condition? And at what point in the pregnancy was it discovered?
Well, it was discovered the day I gave birth. But So I turned 28 weeks the Friday before, Saturday before, and I gave birth to my daughter on a Wednesday. And that Monday, 2 days before, we went for our 28-week sonogram, the 3D one, you know, where the babies look like Martians and aliens. And
yeah, yeah.
And the doctor said to me, and this was a special doctor, it wasn't like my normal OB. The doctor said to me, oh, you know, the baby is a little bit small. I'd like to have you come in another week or two. I'm going to talk to your doctor. We're going to figure out something. I'm like, okay. I had also started to not feel well maybe 2 days prior, but I thought that since I had such an easy first 28 weeks, that pregnancy was catching up with me. So I thought a lot of things that could have been warning signs or should have been warning signs were just me hitting the 28-week mark. And for example, that I felt like I couldn't even eat or drink anymore. My stomach felt like hard as a rock. And prior to when I got weighed the week before, I had only gained like 6.5-7 pounds. Through 28 weeks of pregnancy. And as one of my friends liked to joke, it looks like you ate an extra hamburger and I wouldn't give my seat up on the bus for you.
Right.
So I'm like, well, thank you. But all of a sudden I started to put on this weight and I never wore maternity clothes because of that small weight increase. And that was a sign, water retention. That was a huge sign. And I also had a bloody nose that I couldn't stop. And that also is a sign of preeclampsia and HELLP syndrome. And the morning I gave birth, my mom happens to come. So right after that 28, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around. Right after that sonogram, my husband jumped on a plane to Paris. He goes to Paris every year, the same like week to 10 days for like an industry event. And thinking, okay, the baby's a little bit small, but everything else seems fine. I know you're not feeling well, but your mom's coming tomorrow. And I'm like, go, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And my mom came the next day and she told me I looked like a POS. And she had just seen me maybe 10 days before. And so she got there Tuesday night, and then Wednesday morning, I woke up and I started to see double. And I said to my mom, something is wrong. And she goes, let's call the doctor. I don't know, but I think we should just go to call the doctor. And I called his office. He was doing rounds and at the hospital. And they said to me, you know, can you come in at 12:30? Sure, no problem. I walked into his office at 12:30. We walked into the hospital at 1. She was born in 3:16.
Wow. Okay.
I was a complete emergency. I was knocked out. I did not meet her for 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah. I was that case that every single person on the maternity floor knew who I was. I was next to the labor and delivery OR for 2.5 days until I moved to my room, which was closest to the NICU. And when my doctor told me that we were going to go to the hospital and not leave till I had the baby, I was so confused. But I was also kind of really out of it, not aware actually my body was shutting down and my organs were shutting down.
Wow.
And I had no clue how sick I really was and how heroically, he was so calm and saved both my daughters and my life.
Yeah, wow, that is quite something. And just for those who might be listening, you mentioned two conditions, one called HELP, which I believe is an acronym, H-E-L-L-P, and preeclampsia. If we could just define for those who might not be aware what preeclampsia is, and then is HELP a subset of preeclampsia?
HELP syndrome happens roughly in about 10% of cases that are preeclampsia.
Okay.
It's kind of a more deadly and extreme form. But preeclampsia is essentially when you have incredibly high blood pressure. My blood pressure, which normally was low, like 110 over 68 or something, was 190 over 160, which is near stroke levels. And so, but compounded with what I had, the bloody nose, which was a sign of the HELP syndrome, I was losing platelets because of all the blood loss. And it was causing my liver enzymes to be out of whack and like my hemoglobin. So it stands for hemoglobin, enzymes in your liver. And like I was having placenta, my placenta was separating from the uterine wall. And yeah, and my pancreas also. So all these things combined. The only way to save us both was to take the baby out. And that helps almost a lot with the preeclampsia, the HELP syndrome. It doesn't help with as much right away. And I was given a magnesium drip. And the reason I didn't meet my daughter was because I was hallucinating from all the magnesium that they were giving me. They were constantly giving me, they were giving me platelets. They didn't know if my blood would clot when they were taking my daughter, if I'd need a hysterectomy. They didn't know anything. You know, fortunately, for in that part, it was, they were able to take her at just a simple, like, C-section. I don't mean to say simple, but based upon the other choices that they told my mom that could happen. And, so yes, and now when I look back on it, there are so many warning signs that I just didn't know. And I think the thing, I think what's also scary is that I had never really known even about preeclampsia. And it is very common in about 25% of births in the US, at least. I'm not pretty sure. I'm not sure about statistics in Canada. So that's a large enough number.
Oh, yeah. That's quite significant. And so preeclampsia, how does that affect the baby?
Well, so the your blood pressure, right, you could have a stroke. So you they need to regulate your blood pressure. Now, sometimes what they do is if someone has preeclampsia, they monitor them, they put them on bed rest, they give them blood pressure medication. But mine was at extremely high. So there was really no, there was nothing that they could do to get that down short of taking the baby. Plus, on top of the fact, like I said, my organs were shutting down. So in order to save us both, they had to take her early.
So this, as you describe it, I'm thinking this is like an immensely traumatic experience to go through. I mean, you had to go through the, I mean, sort of being rushed to the hospital, not entirely knowing what was going on, not seeing your daughter for 3 days, you know, hallucinating, not sure what's going on. When did you kind of have a moment of clarity and realization about what all had taken place?
I would say right when I right before I met her, or right as I was going to meet her, I still at that point didn't understand the totality of the experience, but I remember now my husband was back from Europe at this point and he was telling me, he goes, okay, we're going to go into the NICU and you're going to meet Jenna. And I go, what? I go, I didn't meet her. I didn't even know that I didn't meet her. I don't remember so much of those other, those days. Again, I don't know if it's also sometimes, you know, when you go through trauma, your body kind of has like a selective amnesia about certain things as a form of protection. So part of that, part of what they call is magnesium haze, when women are given these high doses of magnesium. And I remember walking into the NICU not even a, I remember actually not wanting to walk into the NICU, excuse me.
Right.
I wanted to take the wheelchair. And my husband said to me, I will have the wheelchair behind you, or I will ask a nurse to bring the wheelchair behind you, but you can walk.
Hmm.
And, you know, and I had just taken some of my first steps also since the surgery. And I said, okay, I'm like, I'm going to do this. And I walked in and I took such baby steps and I was shaking and I was so scared. And I remember my husband bringing me over to her isolette and her name was on there. And he said to me, well, does she look like a Jenna? And I'm like, of course she does. And then I just started crying and I really don't remember anything else. I know I didn't hold her in that moment. I wasn't ready. I don't think I was ready both physically or mentally. And the next day I held her for the first time. And it was only then that I started to understand what had happened. My OB came, it was a Saturday morning. She was born in January and it must've been like sub-zero temperatures. And
yeah.
I was like, what are you doing here? It's a Saturday. He's like, I came to check on my star patient. He goes, and I'm not meeting you, like meeting my daughter.
Right, yeah.
And I said to him, I go, okay. I said, Dr. Romanoff, I go, there's something really wrong with me. And he goes, what's wrong with you? I go, I met Jenna last night. I go, I don't know if I asked for her before I met her. I don't remember seeing her, asking her before David telling me it's time to meet her. I go, shouldn't I have met her? Shouldn't I have? Then I started to ask a little bit of questions about that. And he started to unpack some of what had happened with me.
Wow. Yeah. And that's a lot to process. And, you know, in a short window of time, we hear a story like this. I think sometimes maybe reading like a chapter in a book that doesn't take all that long to read, but the story itself, the lived experience is quite something. And so as you're going through this, I mean, was your daughter given a prognosis like there's this percent chance of survival, or was it like there's a pretty good chance? Did you have to kind of emotionally or mentally prepare yourself for the fact that she may not make it, or was it looking pretty hopeful at this point?
If they did, my husband shielded that from me. I think, again, because I was so sick, he wanted also me to focus on also myself starting to heal. So I can't say that I know whether something like that was said. I do know she was small at 2 pounds. And, you know, at some point, you know, babies lose weight after they come out of the womb. She was under 2 pounds. And I knew she was really small. And she did have a list of, I'll say, developmental, like physical developmental issues that they told us about right after she was born. So that I knew. But I still didn't fully process and understand what any of this was going to look like. And even seeing her for the first time, I didn't get it. And even when I held her the first time, I think it dawned on me, why do I have to ask permission to hold my child? And I cognitively know, because there are machines and tubes and everything hooked up to her. But in my mind still, well, wasn't I just going to go in, have the baby, put them on my chest, and then leave the hospital in a day or two? That I think that scenario was still running through my head, and I still didn't understand how I got to where I was at that point.
And if I understand right, I know in my case, I spent nine weeks. So I was born, for those listening who might not know, I was born at 26 weeks. So it's very interesting to hear a story like this. And I was 2 pounds, 1 ounce. And so I spent the next 9 weeks in the NICU, which stands for Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. And, you know, my mom wasn't even able to come visit every day because I was in this hospital in Vancouver, but my parents actually lived 1 hour away from the hospital. And my dad still had to work. And so, what was the situation for you with your daughter here in the unit?
Well, I was in the hospital myself for 10 days, but my daughter was in the hospital for 77 days, so 11 weeks. She came home 3 days before her due date. And they told us to plan or to figure that she would come home around her due date. And I remember thinking to myself, but that's such a long time from now. It's never going to come. Months.
Yeah.
And we are fortunate because the hospital is not far from where we live. And there are many cases like your mom's experience, right, where people don't live nearby. And that is much more difficult on the parents than from like my husband and myself, since, well, he could walk to the hospital. I wasn't allowed to at that point.
But, right.
But, you know, we could get to the hospital relatively quickly. And our NICU also, you know, each NICU has different roles and even more so with COVID. But our NICU, fortunately, we could be in the hospital 23 out of 24 hours a day if we wanted to. They didn't encourage that.
Right, of course, yeah.
But short of when they were doing their staffing changes, either one of us could have been with my daughter at any other point in time during the day. Another thing that was wonderful that our hospital had was cameras. So we could see into her isolette when someone wasn't there. However, if they were changing her diaper or if a doctor came and was doing some type of examination, they would turn it off. So you couldn't see, and all you would have to do then would be to call over there and they would tell you what was going on. But that's so fortunate. Again, the modern technology.
Yeah, to have that accessible.
And even still, most NICUs do not have those cameras. We were just fortunate that they did.
Right. And so 77 days and then you get to bring her home. Was that an emotional experience for you, being able to finally bring home after this seemingly extremely long wait?
Emotional was an understatement. I was elated yet terrified. I was happy and panicked. I recently wrote an article about that, in saying that it's okay to be panicked and quite normal to be panicked when you bring your child home. Now, most parents are panicked to begin with, right? Especially when it's your first 2-3 days in the hospital. And then you're like, wait, what am I supposed to do? I don't know.
Yeah, this new life here that I'm supposed to keep alive.
And a life that's you're completely responsible for.
Yeah.
So there's that added to it. But for us, I mean, I was terrified because she had been hooked up to monitors and had round the clock 24/7, someone watching her.
Right. Yeah.
And then she was coming home. And we didn't have that. So I was so happy, yet I was like extremely, extremely nervous and terrified that, you know, some type of apnea episode. So where babies stop breathing momentarily, because that had happened on occasions when we were in the NICU. And it's very common, extremely scary, but very common. And
I've heard that babies can stop breathing for 15 to 20 seconds sometimes.
Yes. Yeah. Because they're still learning to move their lungs and breathe. Something that you and I take for granted, or most babies, right? But this is something they're still learning, and they're supposed to be learning it while they're on the inside. So she had to learn it on the outside.
Yeah. You know, speaking of technology, I was really grateful that we got like what was called, I think it's called an Angel Care monitor. Maybe that's the brand. And it has like a movement sensor that you can put underneath the mattress. And so for now, there'd be no point because of a toddler who just like takes flying leaps. but for the first, like, you know, first year or so, we were really grateful to have this little like sensor under the mattress. So if he was to stop breathing, it would give like a beep and, you know, it would just trigger him to just move a little bit or whatnot. And, to have that, because yeah, that was probably like the biggest fear that we had, is like, what if he rolls over and like stuffs his face into the mattress or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and can't roll himself back over.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrifying thought. So you yourself also had all of this physical recovery too. You went through the C-section, but there was all of the sort of the ramifications of, like, this wasn't just an ordinary C-section. Your body had gone through a lot and was in a really difficult state. What was your recovery like for those 3 months?
My blood pressure took about 5 months or so to resolve itself, but it was really crazy because I had to monitor my own blood pressure. And it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? You're nervous, you have to take it. And then when you're putting on the blood pressure cuff, you're even more nervous. So then it just makes it go higher. So that
white coat syndrome.
Yes. And actually, it's so interesting you say that, because I now have that. So whenever I go to a doctor and they take my blood pressure, I start to freak out. And it just brings me back to that place of having to take my blood pressure, or the hospital, they'd wake me up at all times of the night to take my blood pressure, give me medication and all this other stuff. But, you know, the physical wasn't as bad. Like, if someone said to me, well, how was it healing from your C-section? I'll say, I didn't even realize I had a C-section. That's how that wasn't a non-entity for me, because I had all these other factors.
And right. Yeah. This emotional healing. And
yes, yes, yes. And I was quite fragile for a period of time. And again, I think it goes back to what you said from the outset when you did your intro, right? What you think a typical pregnancy and birth experience is going to be. And I think until I wrapped my head around the fact that this experience was different, and that's okay, mm-hmm. and I'm a better person having had this experience, then that allowed me to move forward. For the longest time, I was really, really sensitive about Jenna being small. A woman stopped me on the street and told me how beautiful my baby was, but then asked me, when I told her how old she was, she asked me if I was feeding her, if I was sure I knew when she was born, you know, and this woman doesn't know me from anything, but I let it affect me so much. And I think it's the mental that stays with you for a really, really, really long time.
Well, there's something interesting about trauma itself. And I've been through trauma and PTSD myself. It's recorded in a part of the brain that's essentially timeless. And so there's this idea that time heals all wounds. And I think when it comes to trauma, that's not entirely accurate to put that statement there. Well, I'll just let the passage of time make it go away. It could show up 40 years later if it is unresolved. During this time, were you able to get some kind of therapy, mental health, or emotional support?
So I fortunately was in therapy for myself prior, and my therapist was amazing in helping me out. But still, it was very different, because someone, even though I love her and her telling me it was going to be okay, and that was one of the impetuses behind Flourish, is that it's very different. Like, your mom and I are connected in a way that no one else can possibly understand unless they've been through a NICU experience. And so hearing a success story or a story from someone else, or stories from someone saying, no, you're not crazy to be happy one moment and hysterically crying the next. Or it's not crazy to think, well, will your baby know who you are? Because there are 20 doctors handling her. So there are all these other pieces. And again, mourning what you thought your birth story was going to be like, or, you know, telling someone about your birth story and not have them go, oh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
As opposed to congratulations, you have a baby. That's wonderful. Mm.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think what was missing from my journey, and this is how I help other parents, is the empathy piece, is that I don't want someone else's sympathy. It's someone who I want someone who could completely empathize with me. And there's a huge difference.
There is.
And so that really was missing. But I had to do a lot of work on myself. And fortunately, my years in therapy helped me with that, on top of having like a great husband, and my OB was amazing. So
I really feel as though we should normalize therapy in the same way that we go for like eye checkups and regular medical checkups. We should go for therapy checkups. I really, truly, you know, I think, again, there's a significantly higher level of awareness around mental health, but I still think there are areas where it's lacking. And part of it is the stigma associated with getting therapy, where we should actually normalize like taking care of our mental health. So your experience led you to forming Flourish. Now, Flourish, is it a company? Is it an app? What exactly is Flourish?
It's a company. It's a platform and community for NICU and preemie parents. I seek to educate, empower, and support parents on their journey from the NICU and the years beyond, because growth and trajectories and milestones and all of the support and tools that you will need for, you will probably need for your child as a result of having been born early and are in the NICU is very different from parents that have full-term children. That's not to say a full-term child couldn't be in the NICU and have issues. Mm. But
there's still very much some unique issues surrounding the premature, premature birth experience.
Yes. I mean, or even just the fact that you don't just generally go and see your pediatrician. We saw five specialists on top of pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And that, or you can't see anyone for months. And the physical, you know, not being able to physically see someone or interact with someone is also takes a toll on you mentally. That isolation. I often tell people we lived COVID without being in COVID, right before COVID. Because we didn't see people for a very long time. And so all of those things are teaching parents really just how to reframe their mindset as they go about their parenthood journey. I tell people, who couldn't benefit from a little extra love and support in their life? Now, I'm not talking about that saying that you're not a great dad or that I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about someone who can steer them or help them and actually help the parents on what to do to help their child and set them up for success. And I think,
I was just going to say the empathy piece is so, so important, the lived experience. So I work in the realm of weight loss and emotional eating. And again, not to go too much in my own story, but just to say a lot of people come and work with me for the very fact that they're not so worried about the pieces of paper with my name on it. They're like, you understand because you've lived this experience. So I know that when I come and I ask you questions, when I talk to you about this thing that I'm having, you're going to understand. You're not going to dismiss it. You're not going to tell me I'm a failure or any of these other things. You're going to understand. And it's that human connection piece that makes a tremendous difference in someone's journey.
Yes, absolutely. And to your point, right, you just get it. Mm. And someone maybe doesn't necessarily have to go through their whole story for you to understand their story.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. So, and I think it's that compassion, that empathy, and also reshaping what, at least initially, your parenthood journey is going to look like. And also, I tell people there are a lot of beautiful things about being a preemie parent. So, I choose to focus on those as well. Think of all the wonderful bonding moments you have, and you know, your dad would have been able to do kangaroo care and hold you.
my dad was the one that delivered me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. mom thought she had to go to the bathroom, and dad ended up being the one that delivered me and had to, you know, open my nose and things like that.
Oh my gosh.
That's it's like a fun one.
A different trauma in and of itself. Like exciting, yet like, right? Who would ever think that that would happen? But, you know, so all of those things, right? Or to me, it just did a reset in my life of what's important, what's not, I have time for, what I don't. And also reiterated to me that it's all the little things that are so important in life. And I celebrate every little thing. And I think we lose sight of that.
Yeah. I know. I think to my wife, you know, we're very enamored with our little boy. And sometimes I think, man, are all parents like this in love with their kid? But, you know, the one thing is I used to be like the Tin Man. So I used to hide a lot of my emotions, suppress them, whatever, just unhealthy masculinity in general. And now, you know, I'm like loving, doting. I hug him, I cuddle him, I tell him I love him 100 times a day. I probably kiss him 100 times a day. Like, just, you know, a kid won't lack, I'll tell you, he won't lack for love anyways. And so, well, Jody, you have quite a remarkable story, and I think you're doing a very, very important work because, and obviously, Flourish has been able to, well, itself probably flourish because there's such a need for this. This is an underserved area of like birth and maternal care. And so I think it's absolutely fabulous that you've established this, and having your own remarkable experience means that you can really connect with people in such a meaningful way. One of the things I always like to ask my guests is someone who's listened to this conversation today, and we've only just scratched the surface of your story. There's so many details that really couldn't be fully explored in this conversation. But if they were to take one thing away from this conversation today, what would you like that to be?
I would like to tell all parents out there, right, that everyone's growth and trajectory is different. And there are milestones there for a reason, but not everyone could come in first place. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to not come in first place. The thing is that how you pick yourself up and how you still, I'll say, deal with that, right? And try and see the positive in each of your experiences really helps both yourself, your relationship with your spouse or your partner, and also your child. I think people don't realize that children really do remember. Now, I'm not saying from when you're first born, but they do remember if you're nervous all the time, or if you're anxious, or if you're angry, or whatever. And I think to your point about showering your son with love, we do the same with my daughter, that it means so much because that helps shape them as to who they are. And so, you know, I would just tell everyone to, you know, especially with parents that who have a baby born in the NICU and a preemie baby, that your child will get there. It's just going to take longer. Trust me, I'm still going through it. And I know it just takes longer. But if the sooner you accept that and channel that energy in a positive way, the better off it will be.
Well, Jody, thank you so much for being on today. Thank you for sharing your remarkable story. It's truly been a pleasure.
Thank you. Same here. And congratulations to you and your wife. And I hope she continues to feel well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning into Between the Before and After. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review because that helps this podcast to reach and inspire more people. I love exploring the stories that take place between the before and after, the powerful experiences that shape who we become, and I love human potential. I love the possibilities that lie within us. So whatever you may be up against, I hope these stories inspire you because if you're still here, your story's not done yet, so keep moving forward.